Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I am your host, Colin Dams, back after a bit of a delay with Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. What is up, boys?
I mean,
you were
on vacation. It wasn't a delay.
Yeah, vacation. That's what we'll call it.
A school vacation.
A schoolcation.
Yeah. Just enjoying a nice summer weather right now in November. Global warming's not real, clearly.
Is it raining by you? Because I feel like it's raining everywhere. It's raining.
It's raining.
It's raining in New York. It is raining in London. It is raining wherever the U.S. get in Wales. It was raining in Ireland. It was raining in in Serbia. It's raining everywhere.
It's raining on 45's presidency right now.
It is sunny where I'm at right now, but we did just have a couple weeks of back-to-back hurricanes, so I think we deserve this weather. So Manchester United, in the time that we've missed, went through quite the roller coaster ride in terms of media coverage and on the pitch performances. It was raining a bit in Manchester. Tough loss against Arsenal and then an ugly loss against Istanbul in the Champions League brought back a lot of the pressure that was circulating around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his employment status at Manchester United. Did it feel like in the moment that it was more than usual, or did it just kind of feel like more of the same that we've been putting up with for the last year or so?
Both. I thought it was, I mean, it is more of the same, I thought it was extreme. The Arsenal match was the one, I mean, when we spoke before the Arsenal match, I said this is the scariest game on our calendar for this month because they are like the ultimate sit back and do nothing team. They are a difficult matchup for us, and I thought people were just going to be a little bit too confident going into it. And we lost, but like we also lost because we gave away a crap penalty. Arsenal didn't create anything. We lost because we put out the wrong team for the kind of game that we were going to play, and we didn't make changes to that. Every sub we made was a like-for-like sub, and that's 100% of my blame goes on to the manager for that. He got it completely wrong, and it's like, did you scout them at all? And why didn't you change things up? Why were your changes just like for like subs? That didn't make any sense. Then Istanbul happened, and it's a bad loss, but in the grand scheme of things, if I told you 6 points after three games in the Champions League, you'd take that. It's hard because you're in the group of death, and in the group of death, when there's a team like Istanbul who might not get a point, or maybe at most 1 point, it's usually the team that drops points to them that doesn't go through. So United still control their own destiny. You know, it was the game to experiment and make changes in, and yet simultaneously it also might be the game that knocks them out of the Champions League. But if you're sitting here worried that United can't break down teams that defend deep, but they can play in the big games, then you can't be scared that we still have to play PSG and Leipzig again, because, well, two out of three of those, the games that we have remaining, are the games that we play well in. At the macro level, everything was fine, and this was like a blip, or you hope it's a blip. I think it was just a matter of the fact that it was back-to-back caused so many people to just freak out. And it all stems from the fact that Mauricio Pochettino is available.
And he was specifically on Monday Night Football, too.
Yes.
Incredible casting job by those producers.
Well, that's what they say. But, you know, I spoke about this on another show. Like, you know, he was there because he played for Bielsa before. And if, you know, he was booked obviously way in advance. They didn't know United were about to lose to Arsenal the day before. If United win that game, no one's really saying, oh, it's, you know, interesting timing that they have Pochettino on here. Like, so that just became a coincidence that people decided to make into a big deal.
Oh, those producers were so happy, though. You know it.
They were for like, Sky, yes. Yeah, of course it was great for them. And of course they pushed him on the United issue. But, like, let's not pretend that they were like, oh, United lost, call Mauricio Pochettino, let's put him on today. Like, that was, you know, they had made that announcement that he was going to be in studio before the United game even played.
As far as the reaction was concerned, I think it was... It felt typical to me whenever, you know, there's a bad run of form and people are like, you know, what's this guy doing? You know, the job's too big for him. Glorified PE teacher, whatever pejorative phrase or term you want to use to describe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What was weird was, and Polly said it, Manchester United did not play well against Arsenal. They did not play well against Istanbul. And probably much, you know, it was them shooting themselves in the foot. For the same reason why we were so frustrated during that Chelsea game, felt like Manchester United gave Arsenal way too much respect. And so we kind of keep running into this thing where it's like, you know what, let's just go out there and be the better team instead of like trying to over tinker it. I think the Istanbul game was a lot more frustrating than the Arsenal game simply because that first goal was such a blatantly just bad defensive error. And I think that's what really stuck out in a lot of people's minds because of, you know, just how the goal looked, how it came to be. And ultimately, it looked like Manchester United was relatively toothless trying to break down Istanbul. And so it's one of those problems. I think a lot of people were reacting to the fact that it's like, oh, are Manchester United's problems rearing their head again? But when you like zoom out just a little bit more in the grand scheme of things, like, yeah, Istanbul's lost bad. Arsenal lost bad. But they were just coming off of holding that Chelsea offense to a draw and that they had just beaten Paris. They had just beaten RB Leipzig. So, like, they had a good string of results. So it felt incredibly knee-jerk because then, of course, the team comes out and they take care of business against Everton, I think, in rather resounding fashion. I mean, that Everton side is good. I don't think we should.
And, and that was a come from behind win as well.
They weren't playing well, but that's not even it. It was more to go off what Nathan was saying was the fact that everybody was like, well, Ollie's clearly lost the team and the team's not responding to Ollie. And it's like, yeah, they lost 6-1 and how'd they come back? They came back by beating Newcastle after, you know, 2 minutes in, they get a fluke own goal. And that would have been the perfect time to be like, God, nothing, you know, put your heads down. Nothing's going right. And they fought back. And then they went to Paris and they performed what an incredibly well-coached game. You could see the system in play. You could see exactly what they were trying to do. And you could see exactly what Solskjaer's tactics were. And they played them to a T. And then they held Chelsea to a draw, which some people say, okay, that's a solid point, especially because it's a clean sheet. I think they blew it. And then they go and they pummel Leipzig 5-0, which everybody was like, yo, Leipzig, this is a tough one. Nagelsmann's the top young coach in Europe.
His favorite.
And they pummel them. So you're going to tell me that after responding like that and winning 5-0, that was when the player said, right, this manager can't get it done and we're going to quit? Like, I mean, that's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And there were, like I said, the Arsenal game, there were very valid questions to ask of Solskjaer, and I think he blew it. But, like, let's, you know, ask the valid questions. Don't just go back to the, oh, he's in over his head. Like, you know who was in over his head? Bob Bradley was in over his head at Swansea. Like, if Solskjaer was in over his head, he wouldn't be winning any games. And he certainly wouldn't.
Frank de Boer.
Yeah, and he certainly wouldn't be beating.
Failing upwards.
And Frank Lampard and I shouldn't lump Frank Lampard into that, but the likes of Pep, like, multiple times, he's not in over his head. There are valid questions to ask him. Ask the valid ones.
Yeah. And if you want to throw your conspiracy theory hat on, I mean, this is what it was, is you had two results that lined up perfectly where anybody who has an agenda against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this was their moment to pounce and, like, really be loud on Twitter, be loud if they were a pundit, you know, whatever show that they were going to be on, this, it was just lined up perfectly. As much of a coincidence as it was for Pochettino to be on that show, it was a perfect coincidence for everybody to get out their pitchforks. I don't know whose wife Ole Gunnar Solskjaer might have slept with, or like who he wronged, who he like beat up in a fight. I don't know why there are some people who are just like so anti Ole to the point that it's become this toxic. But yeah, this was just a perfect setup for them to just get out the pitchforks. And then what did Ole do? Got a 3-1 result at Goodison Park against, I don't know if you've heard of him, Carlo Ancelotti, pretty good manager. It all stems from
the fact that everybody wanted Pochettino when Mourinho got fired. Yep. And it seemed a lock that Pochettino was going to come. And it was just, oh, you know, like, let's hire a caretaker because Poch isn't going to leave in the middle of the season. Okay, good idea. It was Poch or Zidane. It was like, Zidane's available. And then it was like, no, we're going to hire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the caretaker. And I was like, okay, that's odd and weird, but like, clearly the plan is let him finish out the season and then we will bring in Poch. And then he just won and he won and he won. And did they give him the job too early? Yeah, probably, but he still earned it. I mean, he was the one sitting there being like, I'm not, you know, this run of results isn't sustainable and it's going to taper off. We are not going to be able to play like this game after game. And once he got the job, he started to tinker around and be like, and look around for what's going on next season. Like, there's a reason that Ander Herrera stopped playing, because he knew, you're not going to be here next year. I am. And I need to see, you know, what we've got. And I think a lot of people never got over that. So the fact that, like, we went into the following season with a rebuild, it was like, as soon as things got off to a rough start, the pitchforks were out and they've never gone away. Like, by the end of last season, he should have won everybody over. And then it's, no, you lost to Crystal Palace on the opening day. After a very weird summer, you know,
he took this team to third place, right, and they already want to fire him.
A very weird summer. It's like, you lost to Crystal Palace. It's like, no, he's in over his head. And it's like, you're right. Like, or he's too inexperienced now. Like, you should get a better. And it's like, you're right. He is very inexperienced. We probably should have hired a manager with more experience at dealing with a global pandemic and not having a preseason. Like, I will give you that. But he is not too experienced at handling that. And maybe he didn't handle it the best.
Even the football experience side of this, though, David Moyes admittedly was not this kind of hire, but Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho are the experience hires that Manchester United made, and both failed pretty spectacularly. And Solskjaer is different from them, not necessarily in, you know, success yet, because he hasn't won a trophy, but you see this every time things go sour and there is all this pressure on them. The players don't give up on him the same way that they did in those other teams, and especially Jose Mourinho, because Solskjaer's first loyalty is to this club. And I think that at times that is overplayed, and the whole Manchester United way is not something that you can just rely on to win all the time. But the fact that he understands the culture of this club and that he focuses on his players, I think, has to be a factor in determining whether or not you want to take the risk on another manager.
So what you said there was really important, in that when you have losses like this and everybody's questioning the players and whether they're committed to Solskjaer, you remember when it was clear that Mourinho lost the dressing room and his job was on the line, and who kept popping up every week, or seemingly every week, to score the equalizer or the winner to save Mourinho's job? Anthony Martial, who was not one of Mourinho's favorite players, and Mourinho was certainly nowhere near the top of one of Martial's favorite people. I mean, we know he wanted to leave the club. He didn't sign a new contract until he left, and yet he was the one popping up to save Mourinho's job.
It felt like link-ups between him and Pogba, who was another player was not Mourinho's favorite.
Right. But it's, you know, the leaders of the club, it wasn't them stepping up. It was Anthony Martial. Like, I don't know why you kept saving the guy's job, but in a situation like this,
Alexis Sanchez against Newcastle.
But who scored the equalizer?
Yeah.
When you are in this situation where you want to say, like, that the team's behind you, is behind the manager, you need the leaders of the team to step up. And that was the biggest positive takeaway out of this Everton match was your captain, Harry Maguire, put in one of his best games in a red shirt. Bruno Fernandes, your best player, came out 2 goals and an assist. Like, the leaders of this team were the ones who responded. And when that happens, everybody's going to fall in line.
Yeah, and it's almost like we just got a clip when Polly and I on previous episodes have said this. So that way we can just run it back at the beginning of every episode. What makes you think, based on the way the board and Ed Woodward have behaved, that Mauricio Pochettino is doing a different job than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? What is Julian Nagelsmann doing that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can't do? Because at the end of the day, you have to manage Manchester United right now with at least one hand tied behind your back. So
this is what I say, like, Mauricio Pochettino, like I tweeted this last week. I was like, I'm excited for Mauricio Pochettino to come in and install his 4-2-3-1 system. It's going to be so radically different with his fullbacks bombing up the pitch. When everybody complains, our fullbacks aren't good enough going forward. Well, you think they're going to be better under Pochettino? But, like, by the way, there's no Harry Kane for them to bomb crosses into. Like, there's no elite shot creator the way Harry Kane was in the middle. But, and people were like, oh, yeah, well, he would adapt and everything. And I'm like, well, how do you know that? Because he never really adapted at Tottenham. Like, when Harry Kane got hurt, his only alternative was use a back three. And sometimes he'd use a back three at other times because, you know, Trippier struggled defensively and he wanted to, you know, get some cover there, but he wanted to have his fullbacks bombing down. Like, we don't know that he would react or how he would react. But what we do know is he'd have to come in. He'd have the same situation right now. I'm like, Mauricio Pochettino took Tottenham to massive heights in his third year, in his fourth year. He entered Tottenham the same level, the same situation, basically, that Solskjaer entered. So you're judging Pochettino on years 3 and 4 of what he did compared to Ollie 6 games into year 2. So, and like, my whole thing is, what we needed post Mourinho, Mauricio Pochettino was perfect for. He was the right manager to take over Manchester United after Jose Mourinho. That does not mean he is the right manager to take over Manchester United now.
Yeah, and maybe one other thing that's weighing on the board's mind too. I bet you Mauricio Pochettino right now is expecting quite a bit of money to get him to come manage Manchester United. So it's quite possible too that the board might be showing this, you know, renewed, you know, they're saying, hey, we back Ollie, because at the end of the day, I don't think Ollie's probably costing him as much money as Mauricio Pochettino might. And they've shown that they're trying to, you know, keep the purse strings tight, especially after that Sancho deal. So we will see. Get behind the manager, man. Like,
yeah,
he seems like a good dude. Like, come on.
And giving him to the end of the season is probably less expensive too than firing him right now and trying to bring in a new manager anyway.
Yeah, because then you get to pay two managers.
Not even mentioning all the other things.
Are we still paying Mourinho
with firing?
No, his contract ran out at the end of last year. But there's this, like, we've always said this. Everything that could have went wrong at the start of the season went wrong. Maguire and Mykonos, Pogba getting COVID, Wan-Bissaka having a quarantine extra, Rashford missed England games because he was clearly hurt, Bruno Fernandes having another child, like, not sleeping, and, you know, and it's affected his play. And as soon as everybody kind of gets back and ready, then Anthony Martial gets suspended, and he's the glue that makes everything tick. Like, we don't have a clear replacement for Martial. Maybe Cavani could do it, but clearly he wasn't ready to step in as a starter and play. So he never really had his full first team available. You know, in the PSG match and the Leipzig match, he did, and they won those games. And now you get them back for the Everton game, and suddenly you win again. So this team still has problems, but he's addressing them, and he is someone that has proven pretty adept at fixing the problems when they come up.
Yeah, I mean, not to play or to sound overly confident or anything either, but maybe it was important that Manchester United took this early lump, because if you want to look at the grand scheme of things, Liverpool have seen two of their most crucial defenders now. They are going to be out for some time with injury. Manchester City has seen one of their key defenders that they signed in the offseason get hurt. So it's one of those things where, yeah, United took some lumps, but they now have an opportunity to go on a run here coming out of the international break, as long as everybody stays healthy. They're going to be playing West Bromwich Albion. They get Istanbul back at home. They have to play against top four opponent Southampton. And then they're going to have West Ham as their next game in the league on December 5th. So there's an opportunity right now for United to make up a lot of ground. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, cool. We blew up over nothing once again, because, you know, here's Ali on another run. So I don't know. Keep the faith. And
this is an important run too, I think, for the judgment of Ali, if we're going to be doing that, you know, in the next couple of weeks, because these are teams that United are going to have the opportunities to break down. Which is something that we've kind of struggled at. But, you know, Martial's back in the Premier League. Cavani's got a goal. Maybe he's...
Cavani's more fit. You have Alex Telles coming in.
I think the Luke Shaw loss hurts, but it's not as nearly as catastrophic as some of the injuries that we're seeing happen to other teams.
Yeah. Right. And you look at it, the injuries... are a thing, because that's going to happen. Muscle injuries are up throughout the league this year, because we didn't really have a summer break. We didn't have a preseason where everybody can really get into shape. I mean, even the teams that did have a preseason didn't have a real preseason. We certainly didn't. Everybody's getting mad because Ollie's not settling on an 11 and he keeps changing the squad every game. He's rotating the squad because we have so many games and we're in this for the long, you know, like we keep looking at it at a game by game basis, but he can't do that. He has to look at it for the next three games. And yep. You know, Juan Mata's a once a week player, and he's proving to be a key part right now, but you can't play him Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Now, we were able to do that last week against Everton, because Ollie looks at the schedule and goes, well, I can play him Wednesday and then I can play him again Saturday because he's going to get 2 weeks off from there. You know, if we had another game, if we had another game on Tuesday after that, and then another game the following Saturday, you know, he might have said, if I play him against Everton, then he's not going to be available really in either of those games, because he's got to look, you know, at the whole thing. And he keeps changing the squad. He keeps rotating players in and out. He's keeping them fresh. Luke Shaw is the only player that played up until when he came off, he was the only player that had played every minute of the season at that point, with the exception of the two League Cup games, but he had played every minute of all the games in October. And guess who's the one that gets a hamstring injury? Because we're playing too many games at once. And Ollie's putting, you know, saying like, they call him a manager for a reason. It's like baseball. Like, you got to manage egos. You have to manage... You know, when players go into slumps, you have to manage, do I drop you or do you just need minutes to get going? What do I do here? So he's managing for the long haul and he's taking some lumps right now. But if you're still fresh in a month and everybody else is picking up injury after injury, like, you're going to have an advantage. And this is why I just don't understand the hysteria around Van de Beek. Like, Donny Van de Beek is going to have his day. He will. Because we bought him for depth. We bought him because Pogba or Bruno, they can't play every game. Bruno's already played 1,000 minutes for club and country since September. It's too many. He needs a rest. We're going to run him into the ground the way we did last year, and that's why we have Van de Beek. He's going to get his chances. You know, at some point, someone else is going to get injured, and Van de Beek's going to have to play four games in a row. Like, he will get his chances. Relax.
Yeah, and for everybody who's got the blinders on, if you want to take a look at Manchester United's schedule, from November 29th when they play at Southampton to January 2nd when they host Aston Villa, they will play 11 games inside that window. They are going to average a game every 3.5 days. So there is going to be some inconsistencies, and it's just the nature of the beast. This is what happened when everybody made sure that they were clutching and holding onto their money. They were going to put all these teams that were playing in Europe into additional pressure points because they are playing so many freaking games. And you're now seeing a united front, pun, I guess, between Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They all came out and made statements over the past weekend that their players currently are getting run into the ground by the schedule. Between the and the fact that we're playing international football right now is a fucking sham. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting.
Breaks. We're playing. And all right, yeah, like Bruno doesn't play in the friendly. Okay, but he's gonna play probably at least 160 minutes in the two Portugal Nations League games. So like, all right, wow, he didn't play. You know, like the fact of the matter is these managers who wanted to work in other players, they're just throwing them out in the friendly now. And all of your players, all the good ones, have to play two games as opposed to playing, 60, 70 minutes in, over two games. They're now playing 90 minutes plus 75 minutes. And those minutes add up. And it's a problem. But the managers can complain all they want, but the guys in suits don't really care whose legs give out while they're counting their money.
Nope.
Yeah. To open December, the first 18 days of Man United's December schedule, we play PSG, West Ham, RB Leipzig, Manchester City, Sheffield United, and Leeds United. Not an easy run.
Well, Sheffield are kind of awful this year.
Yeah, Sheffield are bad, but I mean... But hey, we're gonna play surprisingly good. PSG, RB Leipzig, and Leeds United. The way that they play is going to be exhausting, especially right in the middle of a December period.
And then we're right back to a good.
Although maybe they'll be exhausted by then too.
Exactly. That's another thing. People say, well, we want to bring in Poch and he's gonna install a pressing system because he actually knows how to press and he'll teach the players how. There's a reason that we don't press. Like. We Solskjaer pressed the most in Europe when he first got the job. And what did he do? He ran the team into the ground in 6 weeks. Yep. So last year, when the team was even smaller, he started out pressing, then he scaled it back. And this year, he's just not doing it because he doesn't want to burn his team out. So yeah, Pochettino can, you know what else Pochettino's teams do? They fade down the stretch. They play worse in the last five games. They play worse in the last seven games of the season than they do in the first 32, 34 games.
That's why every time they had those good finishes, they looked like chokers in the moment because they just had no gas.
They fade more at a higher level than any other team. In two of those seasons, they were picking up about a point less per match than they were in the first 33, which is a massive drop. Most teams, whatever they gain, whatever they lose is like a quarter, half a point. Like Tottenham were over a point in some of those years. So you can't come in and just tell your guys, hey, start running free right now because we can't sustain that over this period. And so by the time we play Leeds, like they maybe run, a little into the ground. And when we get to December and this is basically what probably the FA would say to these managers who are complaining, you're in Europe and you have all these games, but Europe is what gives you money, which allows you to buy more players. You spent 40 million on Donny van de Beek, who people say you don't need. And that allows you to rotate your squad. So, don't throw the same 11 guys out there every game. Other teams don't have that luxury. The injuries are coming for everybody. You hope we stay fit. And maybe, when we face another team, maybe they don't. But having said that also, it makes the Istanbul loss sting a little bit more because if you're sitting here on 9 points, even 7 points, you're looking really good for the next round. But again, like if there was a game that you had to rotate your squad and you had to rotate your squad somewhere in these games, if there was a game where you had to rotate it, that was the game. You hope to have qualification to the knockout round sealed by the time that you travel to Leipzig. And then you can just, send your Jesse Lingards and Odion Ighalos.
Rest Bruno for the City game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, the Premier League is going to be so gross in March.
It was gross last week. I mean, the second half of the Liverpool City game, there was a clear strategy was let's try to get out there and blow them out early because we don't have the legs to play 90 minutes. And the second half was just boring because neither team had any energy left. And that's the fact that that's happening in November is a huge problem.
It's just going to be 4-4-2 in Route 1 in the final 2 months of the season. Like, nobody's going to be able to play.
Hey, man, that sounds Arsenal, pretty good for
they
us.
They don't Arsenal doesn't run to begin with. They play Van Gaal ball.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the Everton game now?
I was going to say, I mean, I wasn't sure what too much else there was to talk about other than, I guess, do you guys think that this is the way that we lined up for this match? Does it seem a bit more back to normal for Solskjaer? Because it was the, you know, the setup of the 4-2-3-1 with Bruno in the middle kind of running the show. But it was the Fred McTominay midfield again. And also, I mean, bad on the first goal, but for the most part, defensively solid, and Everton also making defensive mistakes. But also a positive sign, Manchester United players that aren't just named Bruno Fernandes taking advantage of, you know, Everton's defensive organization.
Well, and that goal that Everton scored, I mean, that was just one of those rare moments of maybe if you just want to call it a defensive hiccup by Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I mean, Bernard cuts to the left, immediately cuts back to his right. Wan-Bissaka tries to go to ground to block what he knows is going to be a shot. Bernard's able to scoot it through his legs, and at that point, you know, De Gea's got no chance on it. But
I mean, Bernard doesn't get enough credit for what he did there.
Yeah, I mean,
Wan-Bissaka really played him the way he plays everybody. He came right up on Bernard's right to basically say, like, you're not going to beat me this way. Or that was where he tried to go. You're not going to beat me this way. I'm going to show you your left foot because I know I'll beat you in that foot race. If you're going to go for the byline, I'm going to beat you. And that's how Wan-Bissaka plays everyone. And Bernard managed to just get him to hesitate and stutter. And he flipped it onto his right that he was, I mean, everybody's, oh, that's Wan-Bissaka has to do better. Like, Bernard forced him into that mistake. It was a very, very good play by Bernard.
And then after that, it was all United.
Yeah. Well, to answer Colin's question, I don't know if I'm going to call this it's the first choice 11 right now, but I also wouldn't be shocked to see something completely different coming out of this because Solskjaer is very good over the international breaks or any kind of break at setting new things up. You know, oddly, after lockdown, he came out with the exact same thing that he had been doing the first half of the season to play Tottenham. It didn't work. But then literally against Sheffield, he completely changed things up. And that was how we played the next five games. He's very good at planning that. So it was, you know, given Martial suspension, etc., he had a plan for how he was going to come out in this month. And would it shock me if that 11 is the same 11 that comes out against West Brom? No, I don't think it should be, but it wouldn't shock me. It also wouldn't shock me to see he has a new go-to 11 for the next month based on the opponents, based on now who's available. Bruno Fernandes, I thought it was very interesting what Ali said after the game about him. And now Bruno Fernandes is going to be the one that gets him fired. Because I wrote this week about the need for balance between attacking freedom, giving your players freedom to move about the pitch, and keeping them in a structure. Van Gaal was very structured. The attack was boring. It was easy to defend. You need some, you know, you need some freedom. And against Istanbul, we had too much. Van de Beek plays with a lot of freedom. Mata plays with a lot of freedom. Bruno plays with a lot of freedom. I am now writing another piece that's about Bruno. And it's the same thing. No one does that balance apply more to than Bruno Fernandes. And Ali said it. He's going to get me fired because too many times he ventures out of position and the ball goes to where he should be and he's not there. But you want Bruno to be moving around. It's what he's really good at. He's got a great mind. So you need to find that balance because you need to... you want to get the best out of him. But my question is, where does he fit? Because so often Bruno drops up very deep. and tries to facilitate from there. And he's very good at it. There's no problem with that. That's where he's very good. But from your number 10, you want your number 10 to get into the box, and Bruno seems allergic to doing that. And against Everton, Bruno took two touches in the box and had one touch from inside that semicircle at the top of the box. The two touches in the box was a header that went in the back of the net. The other one was a cross to Rashford that went in the back of the net. And the touch from inside the semicircle was a pass to Cavani, who took one touch and put it in the back of the net. So clearly you're freaking effective there. So stop being afraid to be there. Get your ass in the box. And if he's not going to do that, then maybe think about, can we drop him back and maybe put him in a pivot so that he could be this deep facilitator, but we still have an attacker up the pitch. You need to find that balance of, Bruno, I want you to be able to move around, but like, if you're going to play as a number 10, like, stay up there, get your ass into the box. Juan Mata will drop into midfield to help get the ball to you. But like, we want you to have the ball in dangerous positions. That's where you're going to be most effective. If you aren't getting in and near the box, and he didn't really get in or near the box against Istanbul, you know, then our attack suffers.
Would you consider playing Pogba ahead of him as a number 10 with Bruno in a pivot?
Yeah, I would. I actually, someone recommended to me, like, if you try to play the way we played when Ollie was first hired and basically asked Bruno Fernandes to be under Herrera, I think that's a little too defensive. But if you can get, because Fernandes is high energy and he can press and do the dirty stuff. And then when he gets the ball, his passing is absurd. And Herrera had the freedom to go and venture forward. But he did a lot of the dirty work. So like, if you could have Bruno doing 80% of that, can Matic still play that role at this age? And then Pogba's further up the field. Cause you want, like, Pogba gets into the box and he's such a threat when he is, that maybe that is the best option. Because then Fernandes can sit as this deeper facilitator, which is where he seems to be the most comfortable. And he's very good there. But again, like, the way our system, Martial, Rashford, Mason Greenwood, they don't do a good job creating their own shots. And if you leave the three of them up there alone, you're not going to get anything from them. Mata's a player who drops deep. So you want, you know, you have to have your number 10 be up in that part of the pitch so that he can be dangerous and create for these guys or create for himself. And if Bruno's going to keep dropping back, then, like, you need someone else to be up there. So, yeah, like Pogba, Van de Beek, either of them, put them out there ahead of him and let him sit back in this deeper role where he's, again, very, very good. Like, and it seems to be where he's most comfortable because that's where he hangs out all the time.
But like you said, that danger of having that number 10 that can go all the way up the pitch and almost become another striker in attack is pretty invaluable. We saw what it did for us against Everton. And I think another problem that factors into that, though, is the absence of a reliable option at right wing. Somebody who can play a similar role, becoming a second striker, you know, drifting inward and contributing to possession. We saw Mason Greenwood do that a little bit against bad teams last year, but he hasn't developed with that as part of his game. Do you guys think that maybe we would see an opportunity for possibly Juan Mata to become a more regular starter, or even a player like Facundo Pellistri, who has played a couple of games for the U23s, maybe him making his debut in one of these Premier League games against, you know, a bottom half side?
I think Solskjaer would probably run, you know, choose Mata first just because of the experience that he has. And there's definitely a steadiness to the way Mata plays. And like what Polly said, I mean, if you keep him to one game a week or maybe one every 10 days, then you're going to get a good performance out of him. And he usually plays well. We saw him against Wolves last year. I mean, he's had moments where he's come out of nowhere and you're like, all right, there's, you know, El Mago again. So I think he does bring a steadiness. He's not going to bring the pace and the energy. God forbid if we do try to press, you know, he's not the guy to do that. But I don't see why not, because he can facilitate from that right wing, especially if you've got I would be curious to almost see him on the right side when you get Edinson Cavani inside the game then, too, because it's like, all right, maybe he's curling balls in from the right side. Maybe Tellez is curling balls in from the left side. That gives us that different dimension that we keep wondering if that's coming to unite it with Edinson Cavani. Because certainly, too, this team's just going to have to be not only flexible with its lineup, but the way it plays.
I wonder if we're going to if we'll see Mata and Cavani at the same time. I think when Cavani comes in there to play down the middle, you're looking to play a bit of a different style than when Martial is. And, you know, Mata is someone that you gotta put him on a pitch count, and he probably doesn't fit that style. So like when Cavani comes in, that's maybe you throw Rashford there. Maybe you give Palestri a shot there, but you're probably looking for something different out of your right wing than when Martial is in there. And I think that's part of why Mata's been playing really well right now, is because he suits that style, like this Martial false nine-ish style, very, very well. And or just dropping deeper into midfield with Fred and McTominay to help progress the ball, as long as Bruno stays forward. I just wonder, you know, even at once a week, will he be able to do it game after game? Because, you know, he played very well against Newcastle. He played very well against Everton. Pretty invisible versus Chelsea. Pretty invisible versus Istanbul. So I think there's going to be games for him, and there's going to be not games for him. And you need to figure out when the right time is to play him. But yeah, Colin's right. Like, right wing is just a black hole. And that's the other thing about Pochettino. Like, if he came in, you know, it's not like he comes in and says, I can play on the right wing. Like, he'd have to figure the same thing out. Like, Mason Greenwood, unbelievable finisher, doesn't create any chances. And how many chances are we not, you know, when he's in there, you're hoping that you can, you know, how much do we lose by having to play basically with 10 guys to create chances? Because Mason Greenwood, when he gets the ball at the edge of the box, we see it four players every time. We saw it against Brighton, Tottenham, Chelsea, Istanbul. It's four players just converge on him. They'll leave everybody else open because he still hasn't learned, hey, just lay that ball off to Rashford. He's wide open. And until he does that, you can't, you're playing at a detriment. So yeah, it's going to be very tough. That's what Solskjaer has to deal with week in, week out now, is figuring out how to hide that right wing.
Yeah. And, you know, a constant reminder of the failure to sign, you know, Jadon Sancho or even a Jack Grealish, who doesn't play on the right, but we can imagine that he does.
No, well, I mean, that's the there's a reason why Jadon Sancho was transfer target number one. Clearly, Solskjaer knew where our biggest hole was. There's a reason why Jack Grealish was transfer target number two, and it was not depth for Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba. It was, but it was also depth because for that left side, because Jack Grealish provides something that Marcus Rashford does not. And people, you know, everybody says, why would Grealish come to United? Like, who would he get in to the team over? He'd get in over Marcus Rashford. Not in every game, but in games against the team that's going to sit deep, Arsenal, West Brom, those kind of games, you're better off with Jack Grealish out there than you are with Marcus Rashford.
And it would give Grealish Rashford also a chance provides, to stay healthy.
Yeah, competition. I mean, as much as I love Marcus Rashford, and I think that he is an invaluable asset to this team moving forward, everyone can kind of benefit from, you know, competition. And one of the issues we've seen from Rashford this season is that when he tries to take people on, he kind of runs possession into the ground a little bit. That's something that he could develop.
He disappears against low blocks. You look at it last year. He played 21 games against teams that sat back. He scored 5 goals. He played 11 games against teams that wanted to have the ball and attack United. And he scored, I think it was 10 goals in those games, including that stripping out the penalties, except for the ones that he won, is how I counted that. So but he only wins penalties in those games also, where there is space to run in behind and to run at defenders. But when you're dealing with two blocks of four, there isn't that space to run it. You know, the defender's not going to lunge in and try to make a tackle because he knows he's got help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd actually tweeted about that earlier, just wondering about Grealish and how close we were to being able to sign him. Just thinking about, you know, Aston Villa were very, very close to being relegated, in which case the price on Grealish probably goes
technology.
Down. Yeah, I mean, the price of Grealish goes down, what, £40 million if that team is playing in the championship this year? And I think that Aston Villa staying up completely changed the trajectory of two teams. One, because they're obviously benefiting. They're in the Premier League, which means they're making more money. Two, they get to keep Grealish. And then three, we don't have the added benefit because we're starting to see why Grealish was such a coveted target, despite the fact that he's had these hiccups in his personal life and off the pitch, whether it be, you know, drunk drinking or drunk driving parties during COVID. Like, the dude brings it. I mean, he is a really good footballer, and I think he's really starting to turn into the guy that everybody expected him to be, and it kind of stinks that we're not on that train.
Yeah, and Villa are better now.
Yeah.
He's making the leap that, you know, we were hoping Rashford made, and Rashford didn't make the, you know, Rashford was much better last year, but he didn't make the leap. He made a jump. And Jack Grealish is making the leap.
Are we going to get into the
Difference between a jump and a leap?
He jumped up a step or two. Grealish is leaping up a flight of stairs.
Maybe like a hop. Or one of those, like, where you don't bend your knees jumps. Have you seen those on TikTok? That'll go very high.
Do you just, like, propel yourself by rolling your feet forward?
I don't know, man.
Oh. All right. To wrap this up, I'm going to announce the results of this poll so far. Cristiano Ronaldo is gaining ground on Jadon Sancho with 17 hours left.
Are the mail-in ballots coming in?
Yeah, voters, stay in line. There's 17 hours left on this Twitter poll. Jadon Sancho with a 73.2% lead over Cristiano Ronaldo in the Who Would You Rather See Wearing Number 7 Next Season poll. Jadon Sancho started out, you know, around 76-77%, which, you know, fine. There's a lot of CR7 IVs out there in Twitter land. But, you know, this 3% change over the last couple hours has me kind of worried about
that people are on drugs.
Yeah, people suck.
I put nothing into these rumors because we hear them every goddamn year, and it's always at the same time. November, international break. There's put nothing time. Monday morning I woke up and I saw a tweet with no basis for it. Paul Pogba linked to Real Madrid again. And I was like, that's when the international break,
the world doesn't is finally healing.
Paul Pogba gets linked to Real Madrid because that's what's going to get you clicks. And Ronaldo, same thing. Oh, every year around November, we hear the stories. Ronaldo, United, homecoming. It never happens. It's not going to happen here. We don't have the money to give to Cristiano Ronaldo.
For the same reason why Juventus are trying to get rid of Ronaldo.
Why would a serial winner
come to Manchester
with,
United?
You know, the temperament and competitiveness of Cristiano Ronaldo, look at this Manchester United team right now and be like, you know what? I think me as a 36, 37-year-old, I think I can make the difference here.
Look, he was close to coming back in 2013, but then Sir Alex Ferguson retired. And then we were linked to him every year, and he laughed every time because his loyalty is not to Manchester United. It is to Sir Alex Ferguson. That was the draw.
And the CR7 brand.
Yeah,
and to himself.
And to himself. But that was the draw for him to come back. So if there's anything that might be pulling him back right now, any kind of nostalgia or attachment, it is he was a teammate with Ollie for a few years, and Ollie was the strikers coach or the forwards coach the year that he made the leap as you know, don't want to say he made the jump. He made the leap. He went from like 15 goals to 42.
He made the jump in 2006, 2007. He made the leap in 2007, 2008.
And that was when Ollie was coach and he was teammates with Ollie. So if Ollie's not there, then there's really, if Ollie doesn't survive the season, then there's really no draw for him coming. There's nothing pulling him back. And if you're Mauricio Pochettino, like, unless Cristiano Ronaldo is the final piece that takes you to Premier League favorites and legit contender to win the Champions League, which, I mean, right now on their day, United could beat anybody and it's a cup competition. You know, we've seen crazier. Like, you don't say, hey, let's take that money and give it to Ronaldo, who, you know, is still really good, but we can't expect him to play as well as he did last year. And the next year, we can't expect him to play as well as he did the year before. Like, at a certain point, time will catch up to him. And like, to get 3 years out of Ronaldo or 5, 6, 7 years out of somebody younger, like, let's be smart here.
Yeah. How long until Bleacher Report makes a really stupid graphic of Messi in a City shirt and Ronaldo in a United shirt over the next week or so?
Well, how about this? Let me beat everybody to this meme. If Cristiano Ronaldo re-signs and comes back to Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is still our manager, let me be the first to make the comparison to Frank Vogel.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be like when LeBron shows up to the Lakers, man. Everyone's going to be like, oh, Ronaldo's coach at Manchester United, clearly. And the moment they start playing well, you know that's going to happen.
I mean, they already say that. They already talk about that with Bruno.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, everybody knows that we still don't have tactics, but Bruno was the one coaching us.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of, you know, at MetsMew_, replying to this poll, all he says is, we need leader.
We need a leader.
So,
yeah.
Well, we need leader.
What, and the other not doing it for you?
People have said, oh, it'd be such a Woodward signing because of the commercial aspect. And I was like, look, if we ever get out of COVID.
I mean, we are going to make $1 billion on shirts if we re-sign Ronaldo.
Yeah, but that money goes to Adidas and not us. If we get out of COVID and, you know, how do we make our money? Preseason tours. Ronaldo can't come to the U.S. because he'll get arrested the second he steps out.
Oh, that's right. Y'all forgot about that, didn't you?
To avoid the U.S. since Ronaldo signed. So, like, the U.S. is off the table, and that's not going to sit well with Ed Woodward.
Pull your money, Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Well, Chevrolet pulled their money. We're getting a new shirt sponsor next year, I think, or in 2 years. Maybe it'll be one that matches the shirt.
Hopefully it's some kind of like online Chinese gambling company, so that way we can match our league position with our shirt sponsor.
I'm hoping it's AIG. Not because I hope AIG is still a company, but because, you know, throwback.
Hopefully it's a company that, yeah, does some sketchy things and loses all their money while they sponsor our shirt, because that was the recipe for success last time.
Oh yeah, big time. All right. That is going to do it for us on this episode. We will be back maybe next week for a preview of West Brom if we feel like it, but if not, definitely right after that. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in, and I've been Colin.
I've been Nathan.
You're saying.